Okay.
Yeah. I'm here with my boy Cam Keefe. We're just diving into Tantra, relationships, archetypes, and self-ceremony in a lot of different ways. But he was just hitting on some amazing stuff to do with presence and Tantra with a partner. And oh my gosh. In terms of like the 7-second breathing, like the in and out, I found that doing that in anything is amazing. Like if I don't want to do the dishes, just do 5 seconds in, hold for 5 seconds out, hold for 5, and then try to do it. Yeah. And really, like, in terms of like the act of intimacy or being intimate with someone, it's hard to just like start that right there. You know what I mean? It's hard to like get yourself breathing 5 seconds in, holding for 5 seconds out, holding for 5 when you're turned on or like you're in it all of a sudden, right? Because then it feels like you're actually separating yourself from presence. So it's almost like something that has to be built up and cultivated beforehand is presence with the breath like that. Definitely. And
like, what were you going to say?
Do you have something to add to that?
I was going to say, like, how we were talking earlier with us being more resonant with fire and our girlfriend being like water. You can also see how this like comes to play with like sexuality. I just being like, I can be on a spring like this, whereas my partner needs to like really be, she has to surrender, and that takes longer for her to like fully surrender to the experience, where it becomes like a space where she feels safe in.
Wow. That is an important, that's a super vital note. That's masculinity and femininity in general, but definitely like reflected in our relationships, both of us being fire and our partner being water, is like the deepest impulse of the feminine is to surrender. And that means like trusting the container and like not going so fast, not like, like rushing into it. And I know that's just the tendency of men is from programming, like it has to be like fast and this is what it's supposed to be like, when, you know, like the best love making experiences I've ever had or intimate experiences have been just that. There's like, it's like banishing the framework of what you think this is and losing the idea of like a peak experience. You're trying to get to that final like blast off point, but really just like starting right from the beginning is I'm here just to like really see and love and like be with you and like letting go of the mind, literally, because when it comes down to it, it's almost like we're projecting onto it, onto intimacy, what it should be like, what it used to be like, trying to go for another experience or, you know, like what we've seen before, when in fact it's a mystery. And this is like the most beautiful realization I made like a month ago, was like coming into it in ceremony with the mystery and just like honoring the mystery of love and the mystery of intimacy and opening myself to that, then I don't get ahead of myself. And you know what I mean? And going back to that peak experience thing that you were talking on, dude, literally it's almost to like banish lust from your mind in a sense. Cause like, it's like lust that wants to, you know, rush through things or try to like, or it's lust over here and insecurity over here. I've been thinking about this. What is blocking my presence in intimacy? And lust creates all these like thought forms and all these things that are distracting you from purely just making love or like being intimate with, you know, a partner or anything we do, really. It's like these thoughts of, oh, let me make it into what it once felt like or something like that, you know, or like just getting or having so much premature, immature energy towards it where we're just getting like so excited about nothing, really. And going deeper and realizing it's like right now and right here. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, like, on a deeper perspective with like the thought things, I've experienced definitely like thoughts that aren't my own, and being able to like catch those ones and be like, these thoughts are coming from an outer force that actually wants to pull from that lustful energy.
Yeah.
It doesn't want me living in my loving presence that is unconditional. You know, lust is completely, it's a parasitic state. You feel like that is an object that you
yes
like need that energy from.
Exactly, dude.
Which is obviously, it served as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. It is really a teacher. Like, it's also a power. It's like, it's a certain type of power. Honestly, I've been sitting with that. I don't have like a good concept of it yet. But in terms of like the objectivity of it, that's really what it comes down to. It's like, what are you doing this for? Like, is it for how you feel or any of these things, or is it like for a deeply intimate experience which comes from like real feelings, which comes from real connection, which comes from like real presence right here and now, and not like projecting onto that? And also, you know, it's almost like a devotion, a worship of the mystery and a worship of the divine feminine in a sense. Is like, not like toxic masculine, like want to really project onto the woman and like what's up?
I was gonna say like dominating presence,
yeah, rather like than a dominating presence.
The man also surrendering.
Yeah.
Like you're witnessing her, it's like I feel like the toxic masculinity has the trouble of really like being vulnerable and surrendering.
Well, I mean, that hits, I really wanted to go into that, and that's the insecurity and the fear. But like I said, man, it's like this worship of love itself, because there's so much intimacy to be unfolded that like no one even like really even touches on these days. Like we've been, you know, in it cultivating intimacy for almost like a year now, and it seems like we're just scratching the surface of how deep we can take it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's stopping it is our own insecurity and fear, and I guess just like patterns, really. And I know for men, it like fear of like performance or fear of, you know, like wanting to be it, something you've seen in porn before, or like all these different things. Actually, any concept of what you're doing is blocking you from the actual like love experience. And the crazy thing is my partner, I know, I think a lot of women share this, is like, they don't want it fast and all these, like all these things that men think women want, they don't want. All they want is like real connection, because they feel that shit. They know that shit. And it's like coming in with that in mind. And like banishing insecurity about any part of it. Like there should be no sorry in sex. There should be no sorry in intimacy in any way. Like there is no apology. There is no like messing up. To realize we're both infants, like literally infants sitting before the feet of the greatest mystery out there. And Tantra is so profane these days. It's like, yo, this was the highest level of teachings giving to initiates that have mastered the energy work, that have mastered the esoteric knowledge, that have mastered morality and virtue, that have mastered the philosophy. And now it's time to put it all together in practice. And that's what Tantra is. It's a practice of the breath and presence, and really like your ability to enter the mystery without, you know, without being a boy. And yeah, dude, I really do think in terms of myself, fear, insecurity, and like I guess concepts in my mind just block me. So really just that breathing, that 5 seconds in, holding for five seconds out, holding for five. And also like creating an intentional space where it's like, oh, we're being intimate now. Let me like let go of all these concepts and things I'm bringing with me, and let me actually sink into an experience. And like, yeah, I don't know.
On Tantra, like honestly not too long ago, I had heard about it, and I didn't really know like what it was, with the mixture of new age into like mixing truth into half truths and stuff. I like from a teacher of mine, Bernard Gwenther, who like it just, he really explained it to me in a really precise way, that like the toxic Tantra is essentially just seeing it as like the peak experience of sexual pleasure, whereas it's really like treating every situation as something that can be transmuted. And you see the same thing with like shamanism, for instance, where like we only think of shamanism just as psychedelic ayahuasca, when in reality it's more just like there's shamanism without that stuff too.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I love how you just said that about Tantra. This is what I've been really discovering about Tantra. So my first impression with Tantra was, oh, this is a way where men can hold their seed and have sex indefinitely, and women can just be like in orgasm the whole time. And like, that was my impression of it. And now I'm realizing that Tantra doesn't have much to do with sex. Sex is actually just something that you can do in Tantra. And Tantra is this like slow cultivation of a subtle connection. And that's really what it is cultivating deep connection. At the Tribe Nature Immersion, we're gonna go on a Tantra walk. And on this walk, we're gonna start by like silencing everything and just like meditating and opening up space for the container. And then we're gonna start hearing and open up the sense of hearing and really connect to it. What's like the most subtle thing you can hear? What's like the loudest thing you hear? What's the furthest away bird you hear? And then we're gonna like feel the grass with our eyes closed and feel our environment through our senses that way. Open up slowly each sense. And then we're gonna open up our vision, but we're not gonna behold something great like a tree or a mountain, but behold the ants and the bugs on the ground and the leaf, and start really small, something you can actually take in, right? And then slowly build up to the point where we're walking with a 5 second in, hold for 5 second out, hold for 5, and constantly directing our awareness to just a still mind and reception through all the senses, a full reception through all the emotions. And it's amazing like what nature, what we can receive and like be connected to. And Tantra is very similar, because it's about building the subtleties, and you have to start really small to build a super strong connection that can go to infinity. In the sense of like, let's connect on like the most slight like touching, the most slight caressing of one another, and just like looking into each other's eyes. And Tantra, the word Tantra is liberation, like through expansion. Mm-hmm. And you liberate by expanding in every way. And it's an expansion of our emotional capacity. It's an expansion of our capacity to be with someone, our capacity to breathe with someone. And I love how Alan Watts describes it as being able to see yourself through the other's eyes. It's literally the union of souls is what Tantra, like at its peak form, is. And it really starts by like, A, the best like intimacy always seems to start for me with a clearing. Usually when you guys have had some shit going on, like under the surface for a while, and it's like, let's talk about this. I don't really know what's going on. I'm feeling like this. And like, so then you guys get like a 100% broadband connection to each other. And really like, so there's no fear, because we're trying to create a container where this feminine can surrender into, and we can just like, and we can just be. And so doing that and then going into it, but it's like, it starts so slowly and intimate. Like the connection just builds in different ways. And really, it's almost like the man's job to respond to the woman, you know, because if you think about it, if the man was supposed to be this like projective force in intimacy, then it would just be like, okay, roll over, let's do it like dogs for a couple seconds, and bada boom, bada bing. Or we'd have like a complete rape culture in society, because it would just be expected that the man is just like projective and dominant and just takes what he wants. But it's actually, in fact, this dance of responding to the woman and serving the woman, but holding the center and holding the container. But like, you know, when the woman's getting into it, then you go faster. You know what I mean? It's like, it's this symphony that's going on. It's a call and response kind of thing. And it comes from being deeply connected. Like the best, I guess, Tantra or intimacy that I've experienced is definitely when I'm just so connected that I can like feel into the subtlest impulses coming either way. And also like I'm in like worship or communion with what's going on the soul level, like the connection that's going on, and like getting beyond the physical. Because like when it comes down to, you know, the forbidden fruit of sex, It's the craziest dichotomy in the world, because on one hand you have the ultimate spiritual experience, but on the other hand you have the very thing that's enslaving us to the flesh. So it's very interesting. Yeah.
taking like the perspective of Tantra and just like creating sacred containers for the feminine, just on a world perspective, think of how like the evolving masculine, just that perspective of not being a passive man, but actually being a war, like a spirit, true spiritual warrior as a man, has the capability of protecting the feminine, protecting Mother Earth, protecting all the spirits of the feminine on this earth. Mm-hmm. And we can just see like how that dominator perspective is no accident, being like the world that we've come from. And with the mind always wanting to just do, it doesn't have the time to really feel into those subtleties.
Yeah.
And really listen to Nate, like how the language of nature, how it's speaking in those subtle tones like that.
Wow. Yeah, man. I really do think the masculinity must heal for the world to heal. And like, it must heal first, because men build the foundation, they build the container where the whole world can thrive upon. You know, it starts with kingship internally. I don't see many men walking in their king. And when they do, everything they touch, like, is productive, it's generative, they have a life-giving touch, like everything. And it's because they're walking in that. And really, the fall of man is sex symbols, bro. It's like the fall of sex symbols and the changing of sex symbols. In the sense of whatever the woman worships or like idolizes as what a man could like should be and what they want, men will rush to fill that gap. And the thing is like what media is projecting onto women for A, what men want women to be and women rushing to fill that. And then B, what, you know, what men should be and like men rushing to fill that. What happens actually is like men are in this place where they're so hurt because A, we're living so unnaturally. B, we have like no knowledge of our purpose and whatnot. So this mask and this hardness must be erected around men so that they can actually just keep on taking the hits and like doing the work to provide for others and serve others. And it's almost like this dark time we're in is taking advantage of men's like capacity and I guess nature to serve and protect. And to do that, they must like destroy themselves in a sense and create all these hard masks and containers, you know, go into a job and trying to do all these things and never taking care of themselves. And what happens is then we get closed off to the subtleties. We get closed off to the heart centeredness, which allows us to actually honor things and honor the feminine. So like if men can heal and men can find their hearts and live in their king, you know, then it'll like create the foundation and the stage for really just amazing unfoldment out here. And you know, it's really in everything. Like we were just talking about Tantra, but it's like it's in every part of life really. It's like how connected am I becoming? It's like men's MO, it's our mission right now to actually reconnect to ourselves and reconnect to nature. And it's like woman's MO and woman's mission right now to reconnect to like their will and their purpose and their warrior, and men need to find like their lover again. They need to like go surrender and like find their heart centeredness again, because then everything like it'll fix itself, you know what I mean? We don't need to fix ourselves, we just need to let go and allow life to happen and become what we're meant to be in a sense,
because it's all right there.
Yeah, exactly. Hell yeah, bro. Cool. I was wondering if you remembered those questions you had for me last time and we could transition.
Yeah. So I don't know, speaking on redemption, I've just been feeling into this a lot, being that the shame and guilt programming that I've fallen into in the past can really like steer you away from recognizing that there's always the ability to rise up from what you've put yourself in. So I'd like to hear you touch upon redemption, because I've really been trying to feel into that lately.
This goes deep. This is a really deep story. And it's written into the hearts of every person out there and the universe itself, really. And that's the story of shadow and the fall and then the rise and the ascent. And I was actually just talking to a woman today, a client of mine, about addiction. And this is one thing I seem to attract people that are struggling with that type of thing and needing redemption in a sense. And where we started at was understanding what happened through the lens of compassionate understanding, like compassionate, mm-hmm. like being so tender with yourself and so compassionate to actually, and like honest and strong inside mm-hmm. yourself and look and see what's happening, see what went down. See how much you've hurt yourself or how much you've hurt those around you. And guess what? Like, that's just part of life right now. If there's mad shadow in the world, there's mad shadow within each one of us. And compassionate understanding is really like a massive key to kickstart the process of the redemption. But really taking even a step back is like understanding that whatever our war, whatever society and like people will shame you for and you cringe at and you hate about yourself and the fact that you just keep hurting yourself in these ways or keep doing this shit and can't change and I've tried so hard. That war is the most essential aspect of souls on their way to heaven. Is those who are striving to reach the heavenly realm must be at war. It is an essential quality because that's what makes them expand and grow and their soul like evolve. And really, the higher the calling, the greater the struggle. The higher our, like, the greater our light, the greater our shadow. And whatever, like, energy and intention our soul, like, incarnated here with, you best believe we chose that battle. We chose to climb that mountain with both hands tied behind us, tripping on our face over and over and over again. Because that is, A, going to demand that you ask yourself to go and try to use every resource and cultivate every aspect of yourself to try to overcome this shit and try to break these patterns. It's going to make you go deep. But furthermore, it's going to demand that you find a connection to something greater than you because you realize that, holy shit, I cannot heal this alone. Holy shit, I don't know if I can do this alone. It puts you in a very humble place. And I think that's a really important understanding. Is the more power we gain, the more humility must like complement it. It's two poles, you know? And like, yeah, I really do see like addiction, the epidemic of addiction is insane right now. And I could go deep into that. And that's essentially a lack of connection to our true nature and like what we're meant to be doing. And that lack of, maybe if we have a lack of connection to true emotional, you know, relating to people, in certain ways, then we're probably going to like, you know, reach for the cannabis or reach for the smoke or reach for the bottle because that's a way we can like fill that void. And we essentially were filled up with all these voids that create all these weird paradigms and habits and addictions that are just an epidemic out here. Crazy. And so many people have such intense wars that no one ever sees going on. And to really understand that, like, holy shit, this is the story of man, If you look at like the great cycle and precession of the equinox, it goes from the golden age to the silver age to the bronze. We're currently at the end of the dark age and the turn of the Kali Yuga. And that fall, like look at this. We fell from like a divine tribe of sun beings living in Atlantis to, you know, like this warped world. And we could shame it and we could hate it and we could fear it and we could like have all these stories about it. Or we could realize that this whole world is a great big tree that's dead and it's about to become compost for a new forest, you know? And it's like, damn, our struggle internally, there's a transcendental principle within man. We're here to transform. We like in the first 20 years of life or so, 18, 15 years, whatever, like we pick up so much and a lot of our patterns and programming get installed. And a lot of these like weird shit like goes down with addictions and all this darkness and that just builds and fuels until it gets to a point where your soul is screaming. And it's at that point where redemption comes into play to realize the story of the prodigal son that got himself into really bad debt and started serving out that debt. And on his seventh day of trying to do it righteously, he's like burnt out. He's dead. His body hurts. He doesn't know if he can go into the fields one more day. And his father comes and like forgives him, you know? And it's to realize that if we put our minds and hearts towards something with sincerity and like real understanding of what it is that we're coming from our own weakness. Like, that's in the Tao Te Ching, is like the man who wins the war is most aware of his own weakness. He is most aware of the fact that he's lost this battle 1.5 million times. Like, to come into it with sincerity and genuine view and like open mind and open heart moving forward, and like a commitment to yourself to walk righteously and to the best of your ability, is you're going to invoke that transcendental principle within man. You're going to invoke the power of spirit to transmute and sublimate that kind of matter into something higher. And the ability to transmute and transcend, like, honestly, I think a lot of people that have struggled with bad addictions or really like rocky road with habits and lifestyle and whatnot, a lot of them are mad spiritual warriors, because they're constantly looking for a way to heal or overcome something. And that has led them to alchemy and the knowledge of self, and realizing that, holy shit, miracles can happen. Transcendence and transmutation is real. How do I align with that energy? And really, that's why I truly believe that quite a few souls out here have been given an intensely insane journey as seeds for the universe. Because there's so much darkness out here that must be sublimated and transmuted, that some souls had to be given an equal dose within themselves to, in order to like really like search to the very depths of their being and the depths of their resources and the depths of their prayer and connection, to learn how to move beyond that. And they're going to come out as, you know, as kings in the new world. So,
I love that, brother.
Wow. Yeah, that's a little bit about redemption. One note I didn't really hit on that's really key for redemption is, I had a really powerful cacao ceremony once where I was looking at my inner child and I was just in tears, because I'm like this tangled bunch of knots and density and darkness. I'm so far away from the man I'm meant to be and what that child like embodies. And I'm sitting there with my divine child right in front of me, and my angel and my sage right next to me, the glowing one. And it was to realize with deeply compassionate understanding and love for what has happened and the story that's played out in my own fall, like, and the fall of Lucifer in the stories, you know. And all darkness serves a damn purpose. The darkness holds a great teaching. The darkness is there for a reason. The war has been waged for the most spiritual reason of them all. The highest reason of them all is where the darkness comes from, no matter what it is. An insane heroin addiction of some kind, perhaps. Like, whatever, like literally whatever it is. And to realize through that compassionate understanding that that serves a reason, to validate it. To let it know that, thank you, darkness, so much for what you have brought into my life, for the strength you have cultivated within me, for like going to the vast ends of my resourcefulness to war against you. Like, thank you so much, darkness. I'm going to validate you. I'm going to, you know, like honor you and love you in, and love this piece of my shadow that creates all this fucking pain in my life. And I'm going to love it with such compassionate understanding and take a real view of what's going on down here. And that's where the soul, like, knowing and honoring of the mystery really takes place, to understand that strong souls have been given a rocky road, and a lot of shadow is always the effect of a lot of light. And to realize these things, and then to go to this piece of yourself, to go to those shadows, to go to those, you know, all those like wounded children within you, really, and to validate them and let them know like you're seen. And really tell their story. Like, a lot of them, a lot of the darkness within us, a lot of the pain and suffering we've been through that's caused from like deeper turmoil within, we never actually give it space to speak and be heard. You know what I mean? We either act against it or react to it, instead of letting it, like, where is this coming from? Sitting with it, validating it, and loving it in, and redeeming it. Like, all darkness is there to be redeemed. This collapse and fall of man we see going on all around us is there to be redeemed. It's this intense shadow. And like, how could we love something that hurts so many damn people? Well, like, it's, I mean, that's a straight reflection inside. It's like, how could you love something that hurts you so badly? You know? And yeah, it's a straight reflection that way. And also like redeeming this world and redeeming what has happened and seeing it, wow, we had to forget. We had to forget our natural connection to magic and nature and spirit. We had to forget who we are and how society is supposed to run. We had to forget tribe and community and real love and connection. We had to forget all those things so we could realize what we have. And this is the cycle of the golden age to the dark age. It's this massive forgetting. And we must forget so that an organic, living, like symbol, living knowledge can once again be restored. You see, it's almost like when you remember, it's like those souls who wake up and remember and then have to build the new living systems, like the new traditions, the new way of ceremony, write the new Bible and all these different things. Like those souls give birth to this living tradition, this living knowledge, and this living like love and wisdom that slowly, slowly, slowly falls into the hands of a generation at one point that no longer remembers where they came from, that no longer remembers the suffering and the hardship that like bow and arrowed into the golden age. And then that starts the descent again. And it's the same thing within us. I've been realizing this about virtue in the sense of like when I'm feeling good, it's the easiest to fuck up. Mm. When I'm feeling good, it's the easiest to fuck up. It's the easiest to like, oh, I want to indulge or something like this and whatnot and put you back in a hard place. It's especially hard when you've been feeling good for a long time. And it's almost like the more energy you cultivate, the more virtue has to go with it. Or else you're just going to be like, oh, I'm finally filled up or like back at balance again. Let me go like eat a whole bunch of bullshit or like smoke a bunch or go like live and party all night and whatnot and put you right back into dumps where you have to fight to get out of. And my whole life journey has been this like fucking war of like getting beat down and then crawling my way back to the surface only to get beat down again. And it's just like lessons in virtue and power. And I mean, that's the same cycle in the world. It's like, you know, strong men or hard times create strong men. And strong men create good times. And good times create weak men. And weak men create hard times. Like, yeah. Anyways, man, that was just that spiel on redemption for you. I'll give you the floor.
I want to speak on just like something that I've probably been drawing my most inspiration from on my path is mythology. Just being able to, like, as Campbell puts it, like, it's something that never happened, but it's happening at all times. Just to know that these stories and just processes that have been passed down over time are internal workings, and when you can really like come into that power and sort of realize that like the world isn't revolving around you, but you really are the center of the universe. So like,
wow,
when you start to step up into that power, you're always open in trying to just, not always, you know, sometimes we slip up, but when we are truly observing, we're just seeing how the myth is really playing out. And I think we've really like lost that essence of myth, but that's what we're here to bring back.
Wow.
Really like those rituals, those intentions, and just letting our life almost like be a symbol.
Wow. I really love that. I was just thinking about that in terms of the shadow and the fall. And we are so unprepared coming in here as like new, as infants and children, for what's about to go down. And like the ancient ones would have let their children know, like, you're here for the mystery. You're here to get to know yourself and learn. And guess what? Here's the story, the universal story that's going to play out in your life. And it's going to be about a fall and a redemption. It's going to be, you know, the great hero's journey of Joseph Campbell. And like, this is what you should be expected. And not only that, but our tribe and society should prepare us to embark on these journeys. Because like, our call to adventure will come. And if we never heed that call, we will never invoke courage, which is the first virtue. We'll never take the journey of the soul, which is like, what's the fucking point of being here if we're not actually going to go on our journey and heed that call to adventure and like lose ourselves and go into this fantastical world of like, you know, where you're going to like lose a lot of your friends. You're going to lose your family. You're going to lose a lot of this shit. You're going to have to go out there on your own. And like, if we know that hardship is coming, and that darkness, especially self-fueled darkness, that there's no space in this world right now for any self-fueled darkness, like addictions and whatnot. We have no understanding of it. And I would wager that those souls who have never struggled with addiction or much hardship or suffering in their lives are very unawake. It is literally like, you know what I mean? It is like understanding that we're coming into that and we have a journey, and that these mythological stories like are going to play out, and to understand and like, I guess, get instilled with that as a child, and then have rites of passage and have initiations and have these different things that let you see the living symbols everywhere all the time, because then you're not really moved anymore. If that, like, I don't know, that's kind of like my feeling on it, is if you anticipate something, you don't get phased when it happens. Like,
absolutely, brother. I feel as though like myth is just speaking on this. I'm trying to really wrap my head around what I'm trying to say here. But like, I don't know, you can just see like how in our culture, the literal thinking, which I don't know, you've probably heard the saying, like the mind is not a master, but it's a good servant. Like, I can just see how by creating, just by making the mind and consciousness synonymous with one another, this is where like the fall has led me, because consciousness is really in every single thing, and it wants to be observed by the observer. So that's just like when you're stepping into the hero, you're like you talked about earlier with Tantra, you're really embracing the mystery. You're okay to be the fool falling off the cliff, or Bilbo leaving the Shire. In this world of pleasure and comfort, you actually are embracing, you know, that there could be dragons and orcs out there that need to be slayed inside yourself.
There will be dragons.
But it's really like, I love how Campbell, he touches upon how like when you really experience the unknown, not just like intellectually know about metaphysics, but actually like experience it, having that experience almost allows the hero to bring the unknown and the known together. And that essentially is what the Tao is walking that fine line between metaphysical and physical, because it's not just all about being in the higher worlds. We were essentially here and in an earthly body.
Wow.
So I just find that like a really powerful principle to live upon, that like returning the elixir to the people. There's some that like have refused that, bringing the elixir back to their people because they just want to meditate up in the mountains. But the true hero is one who is able to achieve that elixir, that immortal essence that was experienced, and really bring it back to those who maybe haven't had that experience.
Wow.
I really think that's what we're here to do, is like, knowledge isn't to be like held on to. Torch is to be passed around.
Totally.
I'm sure you definitely felt that.
Yeah, one candle can light a million. You know, it's like, dude, I love the images that were flicking through my mind when you're talking about the great wheel or the great cycle of the known and then the unknown mysterious world that the hero must venture through. And that being like, this is the Tao in total. This yin and the yang. It's like this yin is this mysterious, this chaos that you're going into, this strange world, and it's the mystery. And honoring, like, I would say like the first step really is honoring life as a mystery. And this will ever start to refine and like, I guess, create the alchemical gold in your soul and ego, is like honoring the mystery. As I see very like almost infant individuals, like people out here walking around, and it's just so much ego control and such rigid patterns and what they think they know and like all this shit. And there's lack of any honoring of the mystery. There's lack of any like realizing the patterns and the stories being played out. And also, like, going into that, I've been really working with the four directions and the four archetypes and, like, this the soul cycle and the soul maturity pattern. And I'm currently feeling like I'm sitting just above West right now, like, in my soul's journey. And I'm, like, deep West, like, all the way West is your darkest hour, It's also like the greatest hour of like your muse and inspiration. It's where the magi sits. It's that sacred space. It's the unknown. It's learning. It's really sitting in the mystery and losing yourself. And like that journey really got invoked from my south to my west, kind of like at my end of my senior year of high school, kind of, and like dropping out of school, wandering on my own, like just like blowing through all these like past rigidity and losing the man that everyone once knew me to be. And like kind of like going into my own mystery and seeing who I'm meant to be. And that's like heading west and heading into the unknown and heading into that yin phase. And it's a beautiful idea that like we are the Tao. We move in the Tao. Our life force will our life path will embody the Tao. And it's kind of to realize this from like a sober eyes and sober heart is like, holy shit. Okay. So here's the known world. Here's the unknown, vast mystery. And we're supposed to wander into this to bring back things into the known world and to be like a light that's unifying these two. And yeah, it's just a really like beautiful thing that I think is medicine for people. Is I know a lot of people that aren't willing to like quit their job that is like really actually killing them because they're so like, because they don't have any known world beyond it, you know? And like this job, they hate it. It's destroying their health and relationships and they don't feel alive and whatnot. And if they and society in general had a respect and an honoring for the West, an honoring for the mystery of life, right? They would actually have had the tools built deep into their psyche that are like, you know what? I don't need this job. It's not serving me. It's actually very like detrimental to my life. I'm about to head into the mystery. I'm feeling this big call for change and shaking shit up and feeling the rings of Saturn in my life and feeling the pain of loss and rejection and all these things, but I must do it because I'm not here to be comfortable and secure. I'm here to realize the power of my soul. Like I'm here to walk my path. And there's this mad resistance to the path for twofold reason, is we have no like honoring and I guess like awareness of the mystery that's supposed to play out down here. Mm-hmm. And on the other side is like, we have no respect, appreciation, or know really how to sit with death and dying. Mm-hmm. And it's like the loss of Saturn. Like Saturn doesn't exist in this age that's ruled by Pisces, which is ruled by Jupiter. Guess what? We're headed into the age of Aquarius where Saturn rules. And Saturn is this like evil planet apparently, but it imposes boundaries. It governs over time and death. It governs over limitations and loss and restriction. And the thing is like if we can't honor Saturn, then we'll never know how to move out of a location that's hurting us in every way and a job that's so toxic. It's because we don't know how to like sit with the dying process and let things go. And learning to honor Saturn in that way is really beautiful. And that plays right into the mythological stories of understanding like the force of Saturn.
Mm. Saturn comes across to me as a very like, has the energy and presence of like the void in a sense, like a very, like it has the power of darkness. But as you were talking earlier, like in the creation of the universe, it almost seems as like the darkness precedes the light. So we got to go into the dark, as you were saying. And I'm seeing like in my own self as well, how the personality and ego clings to all these material pleasures and how it's viewed. And just like the earthly man, as it's called in some scriptures. And this it's leading to this struggle, as you were talking earlier, like I've heard it in a Native American way of like there's two wolves inside of you, and which one are you gonna feed?
Yeah,
you're feeding the wolf that is gonna chain us down to our lower self essentially, and the higher self is not afraid of disillusionment, because enlightenment essentially is not just the sitting in bliss like projecting light. It's like tearing down everything that you thought you were and building yourself back up again.
Yeah.
What is actually meant to be expressed.
And actually doing that both simultaneously is enlightenment in my mind. The highest state Well, like, I think of Jesus as the master transmuter of everything because he's the sun. Like, he's taking in all the darkness. He's sitting with it all the time and constantly, like, transforming that into light. He's just this big force of transmutation almost. Where it's like people think of enlightenment as escaping or, like, you know, like leaving behind suffering if they're in this, like, warped New Age Buddhism path. When, like, suffering really just, like, means patience in a lot of a sense. And it means very deep things coming from that lens. But it's not escaping suffering, and it's not like this like new fucking world that you enter into. It is this perfect balance within you that allows you to move literally straight through anything and allows anything to move straight through you. You have no attachments. It's just one pump that's constantly going. You know, and like that's kind of how I see enlightenment is becoming the sun. In a sense, and the sun's taking in all dark matter and all shadow and light all around it, pulling it into its center and then expressing light therefore. And what you were saying about Saturn is dead on, but a little bit off with the archetype of Saturn itself. You are right though, that everything does come from the original darkness. This is like I heard Manly P. Hall speak on this when he was describing, you know, Greek mythology. I listened to his lectures on that. I really liked that he described it as like there was the great like universal essence, the one, the thing before all things, and it was a vast darkness, right? And it gave birth to the light, and the original light was the ether, which is like the yang principle. And the moment that light came into existence, instantly the nether or the like chaos in opposite had to come into existence, because for something to exist, something, it had to be contrasted. Like, you know what I mean? So boom, the yin popped into existence instantaneously. And the yin is like the chaos. It's like the void. It's the darkness. It's the opposite of the ether itself. And these two forces, if you look at like the Kabbalah tree of life, we have the negative rod of severity and the positive rod of mercy. You know, and that's like the yin yang coming in. That's the darkness and the light, the ether and the nether coming in. And those two, so the Tao was born, or the yin and the yang, not the Tao was the original, but like the yin and the yang were born, basically these two halves of a whole that came into existence. And from there descended like principles and archetypes and whatnot. And those laid the foundation for our being, our psyche, and the story going on out here. But Saturn is very interesting in alchemy, because Saturn is the seventh ring. It's the final ring. And if you look at the symbol of the sun, which is a circle with a dot in the center, the ring is actually a symbol for the ring of Saturn, the orbit of Saturn, perhaps around the sun, or just the rings of Saturn around the sun, which is like the dot in the circle around is the alchemical symbol for the sun. And the sun says, yes, I can. Yes, I will. Right? And Saturn says, no, you can't. Saturn says, prove it. Right? And welcome to the story of the shadow and the light in yourself and in the world. Is there's this force of you need a force to overcome in order to actually feel successful, in order to actually grow, is you need resistance. Welcome to Saturn. And like Saturn's ring is constantly, the sun's constantly fighting against it, and Saturn's constantly imposing this ring. And really it's balancing those two and realizing like where, like the force of Saturn and honoring Saturn's rings and honoring the return of karma and all these things that are going to allow us to find equilibrium so we can go through both of them and express the light like the sun, in a sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And relating the sun to just like the myth of the journey into the underworld, I heard this perspective of how like scientists found this certain plant growing in the deepest, darkest cave. And I guess, like, even when the sun goes down, there's still light permeating everywhere. So it seems that, like, light has this persistence to penetrate the darkness. Even, like, when the sun is not even up, it's still in the darkest cave on Earth. There's still light to be found.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So just, like, thinking about that, how, like, we are taking these principles that we're seeing in the above and we're bringing it to the below, where it can actually relate to our own story. It's just really powerful.
Wow, that's amazing. It's amazing. One day I'm going to get clear on our terminology. It's hard in the English language to be like light, because the light of the sun, in a sense, like the opposing, the like the darkness you just referred to would actually be like shadow, lack of light, almost, essentially lack of light. And then there's light. And then behind that is the light of the ether, which is through all matter and all the universe is the true light that's like blooming forth, you know, and that's the Father. And then like the original Tao, like per se God and creator in all of his glory, the unknowable one, really just the all. The all is the only way to describe it, is behind the ether itself even. And like the ether is the true light. And this is actually what a lot of astrology and esotericism and all this stuff is about, is the knowledge of the ether or the light behind the sun. Yeah.
Well, I think like we, a lot of the times, like we're not thinking on a multidimensional perspective. Like we only think we have this physical form. Like if we are an embodiment of a, of above, and we have a causal body, an etheric body, an astral body, the sun actually has more than just the body that's being perceived by our eyes. And I think I read that with Manly P, like that is where we get the concept of the Trinity from.
Three suns.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Secret teachings of all ages. He has an entire section about the three suns, the soul sun, the spirit.
Yeah, that's where I read it from. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Cool, brother. Dang, we've been diving into it. Hell yeah. How are you feeling at this point?
I feel pretty good, man. It's like, you got to realize, like, I don't have many people I can talk to about shit like this. So really, like, it's awesome just to be able to dive into it and really know that there's not just like-minded, but like-hearted individuals out there that really want to like be a part of building this new paradigm here.
Wow. Yeah, brother. I hear that all the way. Like talks like this inspire me so hard and just like remind me of all the brothers and sisters out here that are like, just like these amazing seeds of the universe that are just so ready. Yeah, yeah dude. I hear that all the way.
I wanted to ask you about like some stuff about the trip, because I've just been like thinking about it, and like I don't know, I absolutely love traveling, so I'm trying to like soak up Colorado.